He's 5 foot two and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Surviving Progress. Ronald Wright joins Pia Chattopadhyay to discuss what contemporary policymakers and economists can do to alleviate the pressures of progress. You can hear this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Now have a government in Canada trying to tear up environmental regulations, some of which go right back to 1868, in the interests of just letting business rip and without any serious consideration of the long-term social and environmental consequences.
Okay, I just want to jump in here, Ronald, because I want to talk about what the fix is here. How do you reform all this? And in your book, you write that the reform needed is neither anti-American, anti-capitalist, not even deep environmentalist. A lot has happened since your book, in reality, on the streets, if we talk about the Occupy movement. Do you still stand by that statement?
Yeah, I think that there's a moderate way forward. I think that we had something that was working after the Second World War, which was managed capitalism and redistributive taxation and social policies. I think, and of course, those things still survive quite well in some of the countries of the European Union and in the sort of philosophy of the European Union as a whole. The European Union is not perfect by any means, but it is the place where the ideals of social democracy and the ideals of creating a fair and just society and doing so in a sustainable way, where those ideals are still upheld, even though they're having a hard time carrying them out. But those ideals are upheld. And there's a great deal of resistance to, say, reducing upper tax levels and so forth. So we had something that worked, and we are still practicing that in some parts of the world, and I think we can go back to that. At a time when people are dying on the streets and other people are, buying 400-foot yachts that are so big they can't even go anywhere except a commercial harbor, we need to look at the upper rate of taxation. Plato, back at the time, ancient Greece, Plato suggested that in a healthy society there shouldn't be more than a 5-to-1 spread between the income of the people at the top and the people at the bottom. Now, 5-to-1 is pretty narrow, and I think we could certainly look at something higher than that. But this present system we have, where the spread is thousands to one, that is, A, it's very dangerous, and secondly, it's very recent. I mean, you've only got to go back to about 1979, and the spread in income between the CEO of a major American corporation and the shop floor worker was 39 to 1 on average. And you look at those same corporations today, the spread is way over 1,000 to 1. So something clearly has gone off the rails.
And something, you know, clearly, something clearly is irritating people. And we see that in Occupy. That's why so many people are out on the streets, 99%, 1%. But the criticism of a movement like that, when you say people are going to be out on the streets, the criticism of Occupy is that they haven't had a coherent message. They haven't presented potential solutions. Is that a problem as you see it?
Well, I think at the moment, this is a movement that's in its very early stages, and they have been drawing attention with this slogan, you know, we are the 99%. They've been drawing attention to this very recent and rapid growth in income disparity. And I think that is step one. Step two, once people have absorbed that message and begun to recognize that this is a real problem, step two will be to look at ways of reducing this. And there are many, many ways of tackling it. I mean, I think one of the most interesting ideas is the Tobin tax, or Robin Hood tax, as it's sometimes called, which would be, this would be done on a worldwide basis, not a national basis, and it would put a very small levy on all the enormous sums of money that slosh around the planet every day in speculation and currency transactions. Very large sums of money. A tiny tax on that, less than 0.5%, would raise the kind of money that is needed to lift the bottom 2 billion out of dire poverty, and it would do it, raise it from the people who have more money than they know what to do with, and it would do it on a worldwide basis so that it isn't any one country having to shoulder the burden. But it would certainly be a start in redressing this obscene disparity between the haves and the have-nots.
But yet, you know, Occupy swelled, it ebbed, it flowed, it's sort of dormant. I mean, is that kind of movement be enough to accomplish and put the pressure on the leaders to do something different, as you're suggesting?
Well, we don't know. As I say, the movement's in its early stages. It sort of went dormant with the winter and with the attempts to clear public squares and so forth. My guess is that if things aren't done, we will see this Occupy movement happening again. It's not only the Occupy movement. There's a wave of social unrest around the world. The so-called Arab Spring being part of that. There has also been a huge change in Latin America. Not only popular movements, but the emergence of democratically elected left-of-center moderate regimes that are achieving some real results in terms of better life expectancy, better health, better support and poverty reduction, you know, in countries that used to be basket cases. And this has happened, I think, largely because the United States used to be paranoid about any kind of progressive regime in Latin America and would immediately overthrow it in a CIA-inspired coup and would then install a right-wing dictator to keep everybody down and keep the place good for American corporations. Well, that era has passed since the end of the Cold War, and the United States has other places to worry about. Latin America's kind of slipped off their radar, but the result of that has been that, you know, you look at Brazil, you look at Peru, you look at Bolivia, you look at Ecuador, and of course Venezuela, which is perhaps not the ideal model because that one, I think, is at risk of being too dictatorial, but the others are genuine democratic reform movements at the national level. If it can happen in Latin America, I see no reason why we can't see more of that worldwide.
Curious, Ronald, right? People around the world have been out on the streets in the last year and a half. Have you been out there? Have you been part of Occupy?
I have not camped out in a tent in a square.
But if that's what
it
takes.
Down there. I've been down there, and I am watching this with interest. And I think what's encouraging about it is that at the moment, this is a relatively peaceful mass movement. And I think it's in everyone's interest to make sure that it stays that way. I mean, what the nightmare that is that we should all remember is what it was like in the 1920s and 1930s, when you had, you know, extreme groups of right and left marching in the streets, smashing shops, persecuting minorities, and destabilizing society, particularly in Europe. We do not want to see that sort of thing again. And let's remember what happened in the United States during the Great Depression, when a quarter of the workforce was out of work and had no prospects of it. What happened was that the FDR administration brought in make work projects, put people to work by doing useful things, building parks, building roads, building houses. You know, governments don't have to cut taxes for corporations to put people to work. Governments can simply put people to work, and that's what they did in the last big crisis of inequality and poverty and disparity between rich and poor, which was the Great Depression.
You know, the New York Times called the Occupy movement, I think, the new progressive movement. And we've been talking about progress for the last two nights. I'm just wondering, do you think it's an abuse of the word progress to characterize protesters, many of whom are calling, you know, to go back to a simpler time, as progressive?
Well, as I said at the outset, I mean, progress means many different things to different people. I think this movement is progressive in the sense that they are looking ahead to ways to address the problems that are building up and becoming ever more serious as we're not dealing with them. And in that sense, it's progressive. Of course, there may be naive elements who think, you know, we can all go back to a way of life that we see on the movies from the 19th century, which perhaps never really happened, and which we certainly could not go back to with 7 billion people in the world. I mean, you know, in the 1820s, there was only 1 billion people in the world. And you can just probably feed 1 billion people with subsistence farming. You certainly can't feed 7 billion people with subsistence farming without some very, very profound adjustments to, you know, where people live and how they work. And in some parts of the world, you know, the populations have simply outstripped the ability of those of the agricultural land in those countries to feed them. So let's not be naive. I don't think people here in this Occupy movement advocating, you know, a return to some kind of utopia from the sepia-toned utopia from the past. I think what they're saying is, look, we used to have fairer societies. We used to have universal health care, free secondary education, and even free post-secondary education. We used to see the rich countries giving substantial aid to the poor countries and putting in useful projects to raise people out of poverty. We used to see a lot of that, and now we're not seeing any of it because governments don't want to be in the business of governing anymore. They don't want to tax the people who have money, so therefore they are shutting down programs and going around trying to take money from the most vulnerable people, the middle class, the working class, anyone who has it but who isn't powerful and organized enough to make a real protest. So what they're saying is, okay, it is time we made a real progress. It is time that we got out there. And I think the one reason it's so many young people is that they realize that the old idea of progress, that everything was going to get bigger and better forever, and everybody, each generation was going to be richer and live in a better house and have a bigger car than the one before, they know that that dream is dead. And they know that any idea that it is not dead is a big lie. And that's where a lot of their anger comes from. What they're trying to do is reclaim the future for themselves and for their descendants. Because a lot of what we're doing with the present let capitalism rip mentality is that we're not just stealing from the poor and destroying the environment, we are stealing from our own descendants. We are robbing the future to fuel a binge of stuff that so many of us have so much stuff, we don't know what to do with it. People are renting storage spaces and filling it up all the junk they can't keep in their 5,000 square foot houses. You know, it's ridiculous. It has to change.
Okay, Ronald, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much. This is certainly a conversation that is really just in its infancy and we'll be talking a lot about in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ain't no use sitting wonder why, babe. It don't matter anyhow. It ain't no use sitting wonder why, babe. Live here, don't know by now. When the rooster crows, let the break of dawn. Look out your window, baby, I'll be gone. You're the reason I travel and on. But don't think twice, it's all right. that likes I've never known. Well, it ain't no use in turning on your light, baby. I'm on the dark side of the road. Till I wish there was something you would do or say, try to make me change my mind and stay. We never did too much of talking anyway, so don't think twice, it's all right. Well, I'm a walking down that long lonesome road, babe. Where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, yeah. So I'll say farewell. Well, now I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just don't think twice, it's all right. Well, it ain't no use in calling love like it never did before. Well, it ain't no use in calling out my name. I once loved a man, a child I'm told. Well, I gave him my heart, but I wanted my soul. Well, don't think twice, it's all right. Well, it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. Well, it don't anyhow, and it ain't no use sitting wondering why, babe. If you don't know by now, but when the rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window, baby. It's all right. Don't think twice. It's all right. Don't think twice. It's all right.
Out, you don't know just what to do. Living all of your days in darkness, let the sun shine through. Ever feeling somehow, somewhere you lost your way? And if you don't
Mississippi, stop on Ruby, Abanapa, Lili, Lolo.
In life are bad, they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death.
A piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Records available in the foyer. Someone's got to live as well, you know. All right, it's a lot. Let's get this place up there. He chose his man within 3 weeks. What do you think pays for all this rubbish? Never made the money back, you know. I told him. I said to him, Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money back.
That's all, folks.